number 072134, the United States against Lawrence Benson. Ms. Joseph.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Nancy Joseph and I represent Mr. Lawrence Benson. Your Honor, we raised two issues on this appeal. One was the Sixth Amendment issue that we raised to preserve the issue for purpose of potential review by the Supreme Court. The other issue that we raised is the Eighth Amendment issue, and that is the issue that I would like to touch on this morning with the court, because that issue, I believe, is an issue of first impression on this court. And the issue is, Your Honor, whether the reasoning that the United States Supreme Court use in striking the death penalty for juvenile offenses can be extended here in the context of a sentencing enhancement. And my argument to the court is that the reasoning is compelling and should be used in this context to not apply sentencing enhancement based on juvenile adjudication, and that reasoning is based on the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment.
But there are three others, sir. There are three beyond his juvenile time.
That is correct, Your Honor. Beyond the juvenile, Mr. Benson had a conviction for robbery and false imprisonment. I'm not disputing that qualifies, so that's one strike. He also had a conviction for possession of short-barrel shotgun. I am not disputing that, and that is a second strike. The challenge that I'm raising with the court is the juvenile adjudication when Mr. Benson was just 13 years old for injury by use of negligent use of a dangerous weapon, whether that is a proper predicate to enhance his sentence under the Eighth Amendment.
Does it need it?
Yes, Your Honor.
What about the third act, the one with possessing the ammunition?
Well, the conviction in federal court is the felon possession of ammunition, so that is the triggering conviction that is before the court. However, in order for the Armed Career Criminal Act to apply, ACCA, under 924E, he needs three previous predicates. And what I'm saying to the court is that we concede that he has two, the robbery that we talked about and the possession of short-barrel shotgun. So the third, the district court fine, was the injury by negligent use of a dangerous weapon. This juvenile adjudication that I am arguing to the court should not qualify as a predicate offense based on the reasoning in Roper versus Simmons.
Now, this court's relatively recent decision, United States against Wilburn, seems to cut against the argument that you're making, which, I mean, I guess you too would agree that it's your argument is a significant extension of Roper. But we've come awfully close to saying it really doesn't offend public policy to include these violent crimes committed by juveniles in the predicates for the ACC status.
Yes, Your Honor. In the Wilburn case, I believe that was a Sixth Amendment challenge to using the juvenile predicate to enhance sentence. And the court did make the statement about public policy, although the court said, well, we're not really going to answer the question whether juvenile adjudications without jury trials are appropriate. I think
that's how Benson had a jury in his case.
Yes, because Benson was the adjudication was before juvenile right to jury trial in juvenile court was taken away in mm-hmm. Wisconsin. So that's not an issue here. I think the distinction with Wilburn is, number one, Wilburn does not address the specific Eighth Amendment argument that I'm making under Roper versus Simmons. And the court comments in Wilburn goes to the public policy arguments. And I think in Roper versus Simmons, although clearly the Supreme Court is talking about public policy issues and some, I guess, social science arguments, policies, as juveniles are more vulnerable to peer pressure, juveniles are less mature. But in the end, the Supreme Court said, well, given all of those things that we know about juveniles, it's really a matter of constitutional law, cruel and unusual punishment, not just resting in, on public policy.
But it does seem to me, you know, I don't mean this to be flip, but if you're talking about putting someone to death for something done at the time the person was a juvenile, that's one thing. If you're saying, well, you have a record that includes things that were done when you were a juvenile, and that record means that we need to punish you for a longer period of time so that you are appropriately punished, and maybe there's some chance when you emerge you will in fact conform your behavior to the, in other words, there's a future. And what the Armed Career Criminal Act is trying to do is come up with a with an appropriate sentence with that future in mind.
You know, I have to concede that death is different, both in its severity and its finality, and that the case, because the case law treats death as being special for those reasons. But I think that the logic of Roper versus Simmons is still appropriate and instructive here. And the best analogy I could come up with is this. In the Roper versus Simmons in the death penalty area, what we identify a group of offenses, capital murders, and we're saying that we want to give them the worst penalty, death. And the Supreme Court has said because of the differences between juveniles and adults, that is not appropriate. I think the analogy is here. The group of offenses that we have identified, 922G, felon possession of ammunition or firearm, which triggers a 924C, and we're saying that the worst penalty for that group of offense is the application of armed career criminal. And the logic that I want to advance to this court and ask the court to accept is this, that if the juvenile adjudication at the age of 13 in this case shows that this person is less blameworthy, less culpable, then I think the same logic applied that we should not use it, it should not be used, or it is cruel and unusual to use it to exponentially increase the adult's sentence. The difference in this case, for example, without using the negligent injury, this juvenile adjudication as one strike, the difference is that Mr. Benson would be facing a guideline sentence of approximately 46 to 57 months, so in the four-year ballpark. And because of using it, we jump to a mandatory 15 and a maximum of life. And it's that same offense that we're saying is less blameworthy. I think the logic of Roper applies here. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
How old was he when he was convicted? He was 30-something, right?
Yes, Your Honor. The offense that brought him to federal court, he was 34 years old. By the time we got to sentencing, he was 35.
Okay.
The juvenile adjudication, he was 13.
Thank you, Ms. Joseph. We'll hear now from Mr. Wall.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Attorney Nancy Joseph. My name is Joseph Wall. I represent the United States in this case. Ms. Joseph has laid out the arguments pretty well here. The second issue, she's raised it more for the purpose of preserving it for potential Supreme Court review. The first issue is the Eighth Amendment challenge to the Armed Career Criminal, the application of the Armed Career Criminal statute in this particular case, and the use of Roper. Roper, of course, can be distinguished two very crucial aspects. One is it's a death penalty case. This is an imprisonment case. Long period of imprisonment, I would concede that, especially when you're talking about a handful of bullets. But that's the law. And the second major distinction is that the Roper defendant's young man was under the age of 18 when he committed the crime, which was being analyzed by the Supreme Court. Here we have a man age 34 and much different category. This is a case of first impression for this court. The three circuits have looked at the issue, all decided against the appellate's position here, that there is no violation of the Eighth Amendment or the 14th Amendment. I have to agree with that. I think I'm not going to belabor the point here. There may come a time when the Supreme Court starts extending the analysis of Roper. I don't believe that this is the time yet or this is the place, this particular court. I think there is starting to become a recognition that juveniles, in many cases, are children, and that they're, the Roper Court looked at three main factors here. Juveniles are more immature and impulsive than adults. They have limited control over their environment. They're more susceptible to peer pressure. And their personalities are not fully formed. It's interesting that the Roper Court did not talk about really a fourth factor, I think is a major factor, that we're starting to see in some of the studies in Wisconsin, and that is the brain development of juveniles and how dramatically different the brains are of 16-year-olds compared to 20-year-olds, 20-year-olds compared to 24-year-olds. And we have a child here at age 13, so it's a sad case.
But surely this is something that either Congress or the Sentencing Commission might also take under advisement and do something about.
Certainly. And maybe they should, but as I say, in terms of a constitutional attack, we're not that far. Maybe we haven't evolved far enough yet at this point. But
on your page 10, in your footnote, you go through a series of other things that he did at age 13, 15,
right.
Two of them,
right.
17. Why'd you pick the 13, I guess? Why'd you go to at least the 17 where Benson was convicted of obstructing an officer in possession of cocaine?
Well, I don't think that one falls under the crime of violence.
I don't know what else these others consisted of. They all look like they're kind of
serious. What would need to be, Your Honor, is an act of juvenile delinquency involving the use or carrying of a firearm. And I think the 13-year-old one is the one that I didn't handle this case. I'm subbing today.
The batteries, the two batteries at age 15 didn't involve that, I guess.
Right, they don't involve a firearm. Again, it's extraneous to this argument. Mr. Benson is not the most sympathetic of defendants either, because he's really had a history going back to age 13. I mean, if we're only looking at a crime at age 13 and then a couple adult convictions, I think the outcome would be the same. But he certainly would be a more sympathetic defendant. But he's really had a rough history here with the criminal justice system. Unless there's any questions, I just ask the court to affirm the district court.
Thank you, sir. How much time does Ms. Joseph have? 2 minutes. Thank you.
Very briefly, Your Honor, on your question regarding the other juvenile contact adjudications, the government's correct that those other contacts would not have qualified under the language of the statute. The only qualifying juvenile adjudication is the 13-year-old one that we've been talking about. I will close with this. The government argues that, well, Mr. Benson is 34 years old, so the diminished culpability or diminished blameworthy arguments I'm making are not applicable. But I'm not saying that he was diminished or less blameworthy at age 34. For sure, for Mr. Benson's violation of the law at age 34, he should be punished, and he's being punished, and that's appropriate. What I'm advancing to the court is whether or not in coming up with an appropriate and just punishment, we should go back to the adjudication of age 13 when the court, in a different context, is telling us that the conduct of the offender at age 13 is much different and less culpable and less blameworthy. And that's the argument I'm advancing to the court. And I ask the court on the basis and the reasoning of Roper to reverse the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Joseph.